Hello, everyone. My name is John Williams, and I'm the Chief Executive of the Institute of Leadership and Management. And I welcome you to our monthly podcast show, Leadership at the Edge, where we share ideas across the community of leadership practice in every context, everywhere. Each month, I'm joined by senior leaders from around the world to discuss their real life experiences, to challenge some of the outdated leadership practices, and to offer a fresh take on the issues that today's leaders face. We invite you to join the conversation via social media using the hashtag Leadership at the Edge, or to send a voice message via the podcast page on Anchor with your questions to our guest. To register for future podcasts and events, visit our website, instituteLM.com, and don't forget to subscribe to the podcast series and leave a review. In this episode, we'll be discussing leadership with a motorsports edge, and I'm delighted to have as my guest Dr. Tariq Jamar, Senior Lecturer in Motorsports Engineering at the University of Derby, a sought-after consultant, mentor, and coach with a unique blend of technical expertise and leadership coaching skills. Tariq is Technical Director at Furion Motorcycles and leverages his extensive knowledge of vehicle dynamics to drive innovation and advance the motorsports industry. Tariq's impact, though, extends beyond his technical roles, having transformed the motorsport engineering curriculum at the University of Derby and embedded leadership coaching within higher education. Additionally, as an accredited senior coach and mentor for EMCC UK, Tariq organises and facilitates the EMCC Special Interest Group in higher education. His contributions earned him a prestigious Senior Fellowship of Advance HE, and recognition as a fellow of our very own Institute of Leadership and Management. So who better to discuss with us how the science of advanced engineering can help us with the art of leading people? Tariq, welcome.
Thank you, John. Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, it's great to have you on the podcast. It really is. And I just wondered, Tariq, first of all, could you tell us a little bit about how your interest in motorsports has shaped your journey to leadership?
That's a very interesting question, John. So my career started in motorsports, and you know, motorsports, it's a very competitive field, a lot of high stress, strict deadline, and no much room for errors or mistakes. And the interesting thing is that we are always thriving for performance, but however, performance on its own is not enough. And it's about reaching a state of optimal balance and compromise. And this is where it drove my interest about understanding how always leadership is about not a magic recipe that will work everywhere, but it's about really a strategy that works in the here and now, and how you can constantly find that compromise and evolve with the situation, if it's with your team or even the technical requirement of a certain project and so on. So the blend of management and leadership.
Very interesting. Yeah. The point you make there about the here and now, because we quite often talk about context as being really, really important. But very often we forget actually that context is itself changing over time. And you know, the team I have within the Institute is the team within the Institute today, and a different team tomorrow, and a different team the day after that, and the context around us changes. Does that apply in something as, call it scientific, if you like, really, as not just the engineering part of motorsports, but also the leadership elements within it?
I mean, yes, because why I like the here and now, just to go back to that point, is that even take the technical aspect in motorsports, every race on every track needs a different strategy, based on the weather condition, the layout of the track, and so on, and even the driver in the car. Right. So there is always a here and now to find the best strategy. And it's fascinating when you look about this. And same thing for a team. If you surf the web a little bit now, you will see a lot of talk about VUCA, an old concept, volatile, uncertain world. And even if we have the same team of people, the situation might be different tomorrow. And this is where the agile leadership and understanding really how to evolve organically in the instant is very important to face the unknown.
Right. Wow. That's actually, of course, very challenging, because if we think about that, even then in something as technological and therefore verging on purely scientific as motorsports, where the engineering is actually a vital element of success, there is still that people element and the need to be agile, the need to be adaptable and flexible, is theoretically easier for people to do, but actually much more difficult for leaders to organize in the right way at any given moment. Is there a, I know there isn't a magic recipe, is there almost a formula, an approach that you would apply that carries over from the scientific disciplines, if you like, the engineering disciplines, into how you lead people? Is there anything, I suppose, certain in this uncertain world?
It's a very interesting question, and I have to reflect on it a lot. But on the top of my head, John, you're right. We do still need some certainty within the uncertainty. And in motorsports, for example, it's about the trust. So as a leader, when you establish a good trust with your team and understand the strength of each individual, then you set the proper conditions to let them thrive, whatever happens. And I can give you an amazing example if you want to hear about it.
Oh, yes, but please. Yep.
You will have to stop me if I go above time, John, because I can really talk for hours.
So, good.
So when I was racing back in 2011 in Imola, it's a six-hour endurance race with Pescarolo.
Right.
We ran into a technical issue, and we didn't know at the time what was it. We just knew that our driver lost any braking capacity.
Wow. Okay.
So it was a certain VUCA that the car was coming back. We have no idea what's happening because we understood it after that it was a faulty sensor. But when the driver came back, you can see that the front right brake disc was completely disintegrated.
Right.
And it needs to be changed ASAP as soon as possible.
Yep.
Now, the message here is that even though we didn't speak a single word, I could witness the beauty and harmony of everyone mobilizing towards how we're going to solve this issue. Mm-hmm. And it made me reflect a lot. I didn't have much time to reflect at that moment. I was a tech engineer.
But yes.
I thought a lot about it. And the idea of establishing the proper condition, body language, people knowing how to work in harmony, makes it the certain element in this uncertainty, if it answers the question somehow.
It answers the question perfectly, actually, because one of the things that I quite like watching on YouTube is teams of people changing the tires on Formula One cars. And of course, you know, they're down to about a second or 1.5 seconds or whatever it is to change these tires. The difference between that and what you've just described is when the car comes into the pits and they're changing the tires, they all know what to do. They all know what to expect and everything.
Yes.
What you've just described is something completely unexpected, and yet the response was harmonized and effective, even though no words were spoken and stuff like this. So that's fascinating, because it takes me on to the next question, really, because in a way it seems almost ridiculous to question the impact of leadership on team performance, because obviously it will have one. Yet often, as in your example in a motorsports event, the team is operating without leadership being present, if you like, without somebody saying, do this, do this, do this. And my question was going to be, how can we enable teams to perform in the absence of leadership? And what you gave us there was an example. How do you get to that point where the team can do that without needing somebody there to lead them?
Very, very interesting question, John. And actually, the example fits that perfectly. It's the idea of that, even for me, when I think about absence of leadership, so just let me go a step back here, is that in motorsports, we are not people screaming leadership out loud, like you see in higher education or like in maybe big companies. However, it is somehow in the background in an implicit way. So it's not there as a science that people speak about leadership styles from democratic, authoritative, but it's somehow established in a natural, without awareness, in a natural way. And the absence of leadership for me as well can be a good thing, but with a big if, is that if the leader creates this good conditions, for the team to perform without their presence.
Yep.
So we go back to the idea maybe of some like the democratic leadership style where you let the people give their opinion, take their ideas on board.
Yep.
And to do that, of course, you need to have the proper blend of understanding your team capacity, strength, motivation.
Yep.
So you can slot them where they would like to be. Mm-hmm. And of course, with the trust and the said psychological safety, you enable them, let's say, to thrive and face any situation.
Interesting, because that requires us, and we're back to time and time again, we come back to this requirement for leadership figures to have the courage to let go of the authority that leadership carries. Empowerment is quite an interesting word for me, because I've met a lot of leaders who think that empowerment means telling people what to do and then letting them get on with it, it isn't really empowerment in a lot of ways.
No. But
the willingness of leaders to say, okay, we'll agree the outcome. You characters, you guys, just get on with it and do with it the best way you know how, because we've done what we can to create the conditions, we've given you the competencies, stuff like that. Is that the sort of feel that you get from that motorsports arena, if you like? You agree the outcome, the leader, whoever that might be at a given moment, can help to create the conditions and everybody else knows what to do. Is that the way that it works, essentially?
Unfortunately, it's a yes and no, because like in any field, you do have leader, and in motorsports, as an engineer, as a data engineer, and even a coach, I witnessed from the coercive leadership style to the democratic one.
Right.
So it's going to really depend on the team. But what you described is, let's say, somehow, let's call it the formula, which when it's embedded properly, it creates this harmony.
And that's an interesting word, actually, formula, because I was talking to somebody the other day about leadership models, and he said, why isn't there something, why can't you just give me, here's what you do in any given situation as a leader, this is what you do, because it'd be great to have a set of instructions for every situation. And actually, the idea of a formula, which is enough to give us the capability and the competencies to develop and deliver without needing to know the actual details in advance. Because in the end, I guess actually leadership requires us to make judgments. And I think when I think about motorsports, judgments that are made that produce a satisfactory and effective outcome need to be made by different people at different times in the team. The driver or the motorcycle rider will be making enormous number of judgments during the course of a race. When that vehicle comes into the pits, a number of people will be making judgments about what needs to be done. Before the vehicle is even built, people will be making judgments. Do you feel that the empowerment that requires can be provided, not just obviously in motorsports where it is, but in everyday life, in leadership, if you like, because that's not quite scientific, is it?
You are absolutely right. And I will have to nod as a big yes, because I'm a big believer in empowerment. It is something I applied as a leader in motorsports, engineering, and even in my class with my students. When you set the proper, let's say, conditions and empower people, you will get the best out of them. There is always the risk of where are we going, because sometimes you need as well to balance the task with the team, and you want the job to get done. But again, empowerment can be, how do we say, well contained, but not as a prison, just like maybe as a vase to shape it.
Right.
My opinion.
Yep.
Yes.
Ah, right. Great. So this is, I think, a sort of perennial debate within leadership, the idea of how much guidance, how rigid do the parameters need to be? When I say that I like to agree the outcome and let people get on with it, how granular do I want to be about the outcome and stuff like that? And actually, maybe we come back to what you said before, which is the here and now, because there will be a judgment to be made about how granular we need to be and stuff like that. That does bring us on to this question of the best, Now, be the best has been a mantra in leadership for a long time now. And we hear a lot and talk a lot around about the best leadership. What does your experience tell you about that quest for the best?
Oh, here I am really worried to talk a lot, John.
Okay, right.
This is very interesting. Mm-hmm. You see, I read it everywhere. What is the best leadership? I can see on LinkedIn many posts about surfing the wave of the servant, selfless leader, give all credits and take all the blame and so on.
Yeah.
And this is where I talk about dehumanized leadership. So for me, I don't believe in the best for one reason. I do believe that, and that's the humbleness in motorsports. If you want today as a strategy, it's a strategy combined with conditions and even some luck. Like I love a formula from Daniel Kahneman book that says success equal talent plus luck, greater success equal a little bit more talent and much more luck.
And, yes.
And it's fantastic. And even though we all thrive to win, but we accept the loss and we accept the win as the here and now, and it keeps us innovate to push further. So to go back to the leadership aspect, I don't look as best because it implies worse. I look as effective, even though it might imply ineffective, it gives hope for improvement and changing strategy.
Right, right. So this, and I remember when we've talked in the past, you talked about optimal rather than best, because actually best as in the most of is not necessarily going to be the optimal solution in terms of leadership in any given moment. Interesting, very interesting. And I like that, very much like that quote about success equals talent plus luck, and the emphasis on a lot more luck.
Yes.
Because the, in a way, the closer we get to whatever the ultimate success might be, the more that luck plays a part. Is that fair, do you think?
I mean, it is fair. I mean, it's very important that you mentioned this because, you know, we all have the survivor bias. So when we hear a successful story, we try to apply the formula, it doesn't work because we don't hear about how many people tried it and didn't work.
Yep.
And this is where I always say leadership is a strategy that you always evolve and compromise and try to have those best conditions, but at your best knowledge in the here and now.
Right. Actually, I like that because we're not precluded from thinking about the best. It needs to be context specific. And
yes.
That's what makes it optimal in the broader sense.
And I can give you an example. Like, and I did this in many coaching before. Like when the leader comes and, for example, I want to have the highest performing team. What I always try to inspire them from motorsports, like any tire, if you win somewhere, you will lose somewhere. It's never a win-win. And we reflect on if you have a very high performing team optimizing every angle, how much room is left for creativity? If you're so busy following protocols and the agenda and pushing numbers, you will not have creativity because you need to step back and maybe look like being counterproductive because you have to sit and reflect and see the bigger picture. And it's a very interesting concept we implemented in many teams to really see actually when we take them out of performance and we try to work on creativity, you're losing maybe here a little bit, but on the overall, how much you are winning. And that's the optimal condition you create.
Right, right. That's interesting in the context of agility, because I have this, I'm not an agile methodologist, a specialist in Scrum or Agile PM or anything. However, what always struck me was the more the methodology describes how we should behave, the less we're displaying agility because we're just following a plan in a way. And I think at the what you've just described there say is exactly that. Okay, the more we follow the protocol, the less creative we allow ourselves to be. And there's a lovely phrase, I can't remember who said it actually. They said that if you want to achieve happiness, you first of all have to be very clear about what happiness is for you, and then you need to decide what you're going to sacrifice to get it. And I like the use of the word sacrifice there, rather than what you're going to do to achieve happiness. It's what you're going to give up in order to achieve it. Very interesting. And I guess in motorsports, things like we can have a lot more speed, but then actually we might lose a bit of maneuverability, for example, in order to achieve that and things. Is that a simple version of what you're describing?
You nailed it. It's exactly this. If you have the fastest maximum speed, it doesn't mean you have the best handling in every corner. So imagine in a straight line, you might win 2 seconds more per lap, but then you might lose half a second in each corner because of your handling. The overall picture is not optimal.
Right. Excellent. This is what I like about when I use cheetahs to as an example of agility. What makes them agile is not just that they go fast, it is that they can change direction really, really rapidly as well. Mm-hmm. And thinking about this, because of course, leadership is what you do. As part of that, coaching and mentoring is a significant part of what you do. How's your motorsports background influenced the way that you approach coaching and mentoring?
In many, many ways, John, and I'm really grateful for that past experience. Because again, you see, from the motorsports, you take the performance, which is, let's say, everyone target, but also you understand the balance and compromise. What I learn as an engineer and a leader is that compromise is everywhere. That's why even I loved what you said about sacrificing, because you win somewhere, but you lose somewhere. And what's your best sacrifice or compromise in that moment?
Yep.
And this is why even I inspire my coachee through the book of Timothy Galloway, The Inner Game of Work, where there is another formula, if you want some science as well, again, is the fact that performance equal potential minus interference. And when we reflect, me and my coachees, about this, suddenly we shift the perspective of what performance means and what is the scale of performance, because we look at potential and interference. So potential is an unknown. No one can know their full potential. We just know our performance from the past and the present.
Yep.
And the interference will change with time. And this is what I work with leaders, understanding their inner conflict and the interference to have better performance and lead with compromise.
Right. So if we think about that, I like that formula, performance equals potential minus interference. We have a good idea of the performance from the past and our experience in different situations and things. We can, to a degree, sometimes predict the interference or some elements of it, because we know we'll get resistance from this or that or the other. We have no idea what our potential might be. So this, how do we motivate people with those uncertainty factors to have the courage to take the risks of being leaders? Because actually it is always a risky thing to do, actually, to take the accountability of being a leader.
It is a very interesting question. And I think I do have a nice answer for that. And it was by random, because I was reading an article. And again, when I came up with this idea of dehumanized leadership, about because of the title, we are really putting high expectations and we are removing the human out of it. Yep. I discovered something called stereotype threat, which is a very interesting, and it has been described by Steele and Aronson in 95. And the stereotype threat is the idea that, for example, if we say to be a perfect leader you have to be selfless 100%, if someone is slightly selfish, and we are all like that anyway, you feel that you're not a good leader, and you risk confirming that stereotype threat.
Right.
And we enter in a negative loop of the idea of, actually, I'm not good enough as a leader. So this is where I come in and I try to say, remove the leadership mask and look at the human behind it in the mirror. We, like our team, have the same needs. And it should not be about sacrifice and being a victim. It's about being vulnerable and offering support.
Ah, very interesting. I like that principle of the stereotype threat, because we all have stereotypes that we carry within us. And and particularly in the context of leadership, it's a huge mountain to climb. Because we see not just role models of leadership, but we see descriptors of leadership as being perfect in many different ways. You know, the servant leadership, the empowering leader, the vulnerable leader. And you're right, they all seem to be absolutes rather than relative capabilities, which most of us are actually confined to in a lot of ways, I guess.
Definitely.
And one of the phrases that also comes to mind is this. Somebody asked me once, how do I cope with this when I don't know what to do? My response was, ask yourself, what would you do if you were not afraid?
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite an interesting question, actually, and I must have read it somewhere because it's far too clever for me to have thought up out of the blue. But it's, if we were not afraid, and we all are sometimes, actually, it would change so much about our courage and commitment to be able to do things. Do you think that's a valid piece of advice to give a leadership figure? You know, ask yourself that question.
It is exactly what I would like even to add is, if you expose vulnerability, so we shift from feeling a victim to being vulnerable, you will be less afraid to try things. And this is very all underestimated by leaders, being vulnerable, because it is somehow associated with weakness. But I completely agree. If you show vulnerability, you can do mistakes, but you allow mistakes and we learn from it and we grow together.
Yeah,
this is a good environment to create creativity even.
Excellent, excellent. And I remember when one of my earlier guests on Leadership at the Edge, Leila Rao, she used a phrase which I thought was fascinating. She said, fear is fuel. And I thought, what a tremendous way. That's a paradigm shift from almost the way that everybody else looks at it. Fear is fuel. It's a motivator. And I guess it depends how scared one is. Okay. Tariq, this is a great conversation, and I think we could do this for hours and hours, but we have limited time. And I'd like to ask you the inevitable top tip question, really. So what would be your top tip for leaders who want to explore how we can apply the principles and practices of science to that art of coaching and mentoring and leading people?
Oh, this is a very nice one. And I'm trying to pick what I will be like my favorite tip here. I mean, I would like to make it like in two sections.
Mm-hmm,
so when it comes to the science section, I will really push towards understand that everything is a compromise. There is no magic formula. And think of leadership as a process and not as a title or entitlement or something that you, not a superhero, we're no superheroes.
Yep.
It is a process. It can be mastered, it can be improved, and it will definitely change form.
Right.
That's the basic of inclusion, if you think about it, treating everyone differently and bringing all together. So adapting. But what I would like to add as well, just because of the idea of the stereotype threat again, and not being afraid to try things, my advice and tip will be to remove that leadership mask and expose some vulnerability, create greater self-awareness, and really the results can be impactful. I did it with many coaches. I will end up here, John.
Yeah.
And the difference it made when a leader came to the room and telling, I have a problem, I don't know what to do, I need your help, compared to, this is the issue, we need to solve it. You shift this slight vulnerability, shifts the mindset of everyone.
Right, right. And that is, in a way, is the purpose of leadership, is to help people to acquire a mindset that results in performance. Excellent. Tariq, that's absolutely superb conversation. Thank you very, very much indeed for that. And that's it, I think. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. My special thanks to our guest, Dr. Tariq Jamar, and to you, the audience, for listening. Please do join the conversation via social media using the hashtag Leadership at the Edge. And for more of our podcasts, events, and lots of other content, visit the website at www.institutelm.com, subscribe to the podcast series, and mention us to your colleagues. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening.